on the download. We reload this week's news with WYCC's Lauren Cohen and Chicago Tribune's Ray Lung, Ink columnist Tracy Schwartz, and legendary West African guitarist Salif Keita. Now, here's your host, a man who has already started tailgating for Sunday, Justin Coffin.
Bears week one, always a holiday here in the city until they lose the first three, and then we don't care anymore. Hey, everybody, it's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Preps Plus Chicago takes over at 10 to give you all the high school football you can handle. Tonight, we got a great show lined up starting right away, right after the break. We're going to talk with my Uncle Kelly. My Uncle Kelly, of course, I mentioned yesterday, lives in the Florida Keys, and he had a mandatory evacuation, but it didn't go as smooth as he would think. He's still in Florida after troubles, running out of gas, trying to get places, and they are hunkering down in Melbourne, Florida, and they are going to take on the storm with family in tow. So we will talk with my Uncle Kelly, who not only this is the crazy thing. I talked to him a little bit earlier. And he said to me, the best case scenario is if the hurricane goes west, because Melbourne's on the southeast side of Florida, right? If it goes west. But here's the irony, that his son and his brother are in Tampa. So for him to be spared in Melbourne, they would be affected in Tampa. So talk about a worst case scenario. We'll talk with Uncle Kelly coming up. Jeez Louise. Not a good situation. And they're ready to try and weather the storm and deal with the aftermath. So we'll talk with Kelly coming up right after the break here in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, this hour, the World Music Festival comes to Chicago this week. It starts tonight. This festival's been going on for a couple years now, and it has quickly become the biggest world music festival in the country, in the entire United States of America. Chicago bringing great acts, and it's, really, truly, tonight, global megastar Salif Keita, in studio, the singer, guitar player known as the Golden Voice of Africa will be here in the 7:30 segment to talk about his career, also about playing in Chicago. How great is that? I'm going to have the Mali born. This Salif Keita is a big deal. Today I've spent a lot of time with his catalog. If you were anywhere in the downtown area and you heard blasting, blaring world music, Afropop music from West Africa, blaring out of a Honda CRV. That was me. Also coming up tonight, we are going to reload tonight's news with Lauren Cohn and Ray Lung. Biggest stories, of course, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. What story is going to be remembered this week in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from tonight? I have a feeling we know what that's going to be, the preparation for Hurricane Irma, but always a pleasure to have Lauren and Ray in studio tonight, reloading this week's news. And Tracy Schwartz is going to join us. This reality check is back. We'll preview the reality television that's coming up here in the fall, but we'll also talk about how our guy, this is something that I actually retained from our segments all summer. The guy who was formerly from Chicago, the trainer, right? He was on The Bachelorette, and he went to the finals. He's supposed to, in the tradition of The Bachelorette, he becomes the bachelor. But they changed it up this year. Big announcement this week, changing it up and going with a different guy, going out of tradition, essentially bypassing our Chicago guy. Tracy will break it down and explain what's happening. I can't even keep up. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break, and we'll catch up with Uncle Kelly on the back half. Stay with us. Coming up, Salif Keita's here, the Golden Voice of Africa, who is the headliner for the World Music Festival that's coming to Chicago this week. We'll talk with him. He's actually playing at Concord Music Hall tomorrow night, so he's in studio. He'll be coming up after the news at 7:30. Well, all of America seems to be glued to the Weather Channel this week as Hurricane Irma is expected to hit the state of Florida this weekend. Latest projections say that the eye of the storm will smack straight into the Florida Keys as a Category 5 hurricane before turning upward to the mainland. In the last few days, there have been mandatory evacuations, images of terrible traffic jams, and of course the mad dash to prepare for weather that could be unprecedented. But for many Floridians, it's a false narrative to say that they have a choice to stay or to go. The state is short on gas, food, water, etc. The traffic snarled along the interstates. Many Floridians don't have a choice but to prepare for the worst. One of these Floridians is my Uncle Kelly. Kelly Remmert and his family live in the Florida Keys. They left earlier this week, took their RV north, but like many commuters, found themselves looking for gas and abandoning their vehicle. They hitched a ride to Melbourne, just southeast of Orlando, where they, like many Floridians, have decided to ride it out. Joining me to talk about that decision and Hurricane Irma preparations is my uncle, Kelly Remmert. Kelly, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Let's talk about this. You left the Keys, what, earlier this week. Now you're in Melbourne, but you have no more, you don't have plans to try and head north. Why?
Well, we actually had two vehicles. We had to abandon the RV because there was just no gas, and that was in itself amazing, but right now we have a full tank of gas, but we have my girlfriend Jackie has a condo in Melbourne, and we're hunkered up there, gonna stay. We feel we're about as safe as any place. If we got on the road, where do you go? You know, you can't. You know, if you first of all, you're only going at 5 mph. If you get caught in that hurricane out there in your vehicle, you know, you're gone.
Right.
So,
it's
a tough decision.
It is a tough decision. And it's one that, I mean, you've had experiences with hurricanes before. I mean, living in the Keys, you unfortunately had a lot of damage from, what was it, Wilma? Hurricane Wilma before?
Yeah, Wilma was devastating to Key West and to a lot of the residents there because not because of the hurricane, but because of the water surge that came in afterwards. And that water surge went over the island, most of the island. The high point was about 4 foot under. I got 18 inches in a condo and that I had just remodeled, had lived into it for 3 months, and 18 inches caused me to be out of that condo for over 2 years while they completely gutted it because of mold.
Right.
All these people think, you know, that water they see in Texas, you know, all those homes are all going to have to be gutted because the mold will get in there and it just eats away at it.
Yeah.
And,
you know, when you're looking right now, I'm looking at CNN and they're talking about what's happening in Cuba and, of course, what's going to happen to the Keys. And to see that the eye of the storm really is, it's a direct hit on the Florida Keys. What is the emotion right now to look at your home being right in the center of this Category 5 hurricane?
Well, this has only come about in the last less than 2 hours. We're watching TV and they said, okay, it slowed down and it moved further west. Well, we were okay in Key West if it went a little bit north of us. And we were okay with that. We would get a lot of wind damage, maybe some surge, but we'd be surviving it. But when we saw that it moved down and now the eye is almost right over Key West, give or take 5 miles, that's scary because now when you think about it, you might not go back to anything. And I had just opened up a brand new business on the main drag down there, and it was doing amazing, 3D mini me. And it's going to be probably gone if that eye hits Key West.
So many people, especially here in Chicago and other places, big media towns and what have you, talk about, you know, hey, you know, I know you live in Florida and you're used to hurricanes, but this looks like to be a big one. You got to get out of there. You're an idiot if you stay. I mean, what do you say to people who haven't lived through it and are making judgment on Floridians and what they do to prepare for the hurricane?
Well, some people can't leave just because they can't leave. Other people are idiots, probably. Okay. But and I'll be honest with you, it's a tough call, you know, to leave because number one, your income has already stopped because the tourists left, and you should close down, so you have no income. Now, if you leave, you're spending money no matter where you go. So, you know, what do you do, and where do you go? Yeah. A lot of times, you know, one time I left for a hurricane. Key West and went up to Hollywood and got a hotel room, and that's where the hurricane came in, right through Hollywood.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, I mean, where do you go?
Right. You know,
when we left this time, we went straight up to Melbourne because Jackie had a place there, and we're looking all week saying we're going to be right in the eye of it. Well, now, a couple hours ago, now we're not going to be. You know, you don't know.
That's the question. I mean, are you preparing or making your judgment on what you do and how you hunker down based on if the hurricane's going to miss you? I mean, are you just rolling the dice thinking that you're just going to get the outlier part of Irma and not the eye in Melbourne?
You know, it's I've stayed for a couple hurricanes and I've left for a few of them. And but nothing like what's coming at us. And we feel that with what we know, we're about as good as we can be.
Yeah.
We've got three residents right here in this apartment, this condo association, one with a big generator. So we've got three different dwellings that we can go to. And it's a big concrete building, so you know, it's not block, it's concrete. So that's about as good as we can get. We have food, we have water, we have, you know, communication. And if we got on the road right now, when we lost the RV about 100 miles south of here because of no gas, we got back on the highway and it was like a parking lot. You couldn't move, could not move. So we decided to get off and take a different route because we were close to our destination.
Yeah.
But and our RV would have made it to the destination except for one major blunder. And I think the state's doing a great job, but they made one big blunder at the first rest area on the turnpike where I knew I could get gasoline. We're pulling in this long line. And hundreds of cars, and the sign that says gas or cars this way, buses, RVs, and trucks this way. Well, you know, it doesn't say anything about facilities. It's just all it said.
Kelly, let me ask you
line over there.
Let me ask you one question before we got to wrap up here. You know, it's a lot of the hurricane preparation is about being able to withstand, of course, the force of a hurricane, but a lot, and we're seeing it in Texas right now, is about the aftermath. I mean, Melbourne is a community that's southeast, right on the ocean there. I mean, you have a good chance if the hurricane comes through that there will be some sort of storm surge, but there are also going to be damage that's going to sustain, and there's going to be, and the governor's talking about it, this idea that there will be an aftermath to deal with. Are you prepared for that? Are you prepared for life and cleanup of Hurricane Irma?
Well, I went through it already with Wilma, and there was piles and piles of debris, and you had to clear everything out, and your income stops, like I said, until you get businesses back up and going, and then you got to hope tourists will come. And but it was that water surge that came in and wiped everybody out. I remember looking at a car carrier bringing cars into the Keys or taking them out. I couldn't tell because they all looked like brand-new cars. Because all the cars got water damage, and you know, little scooters that everybody ride got water, salt in the gears, and all you heard was screaming for months. They would run, but they were so noisy, metal on metal, you know. And people don't believe it. Right afterwards, you have besides the fact that you don't have any electricity, you don't have anything that normally sustains you. You normally can't even get to another location. There's, you know, unless you have food, water, and it's so hot out there, you don't have a fan. Yeah. You know, people don't think about that.
Well, Kelly, you know what we'll do? I'd love to talk to you. Maybe we can talk. I mean, of course, you know, my thoughts and everybody in Chicago hoping that things go well for, or at least, you know, you are able to withstand the storm in Florida. But maybe we can talk a little bit next week about how you guys are dealing with the aftermath. Kelly Remmert, a my uncle, but also a resident of Key West who is in evacuation, who has decided to hunker down in Melbourne, Florida, just southeast of Orlando, with his family in a condo unit, concrete, not block, that's important, prepared to not only sort of wait it out, but also deal with the aftermath. Kelly, we pray for you up here in Chicago, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Justin.
Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Good interview. I'm, praying for your uncle down there. That's pretty intense.
I mean, it is intense, and I do think he's been through it. That's the only thing I can give him credit for. If I were him, it's already been offered to come up north and hang out with us.
Up here, and it's easy to armchair quarterback this sort of thing. Well, why aren't people getting out? Why didn't you get out sooner? You know, why did you wait so long?
Right.
But, you know, you're down there, you've got a home, you've got a job, you've got a life, and you try to, you know, suck as much out of it as you can before you...
I have to say, you know, that there's something to be said, and I think we far too often, and I can only speak for myself, but I think for everybody who's listening right now, I mean, if you were in this predicament and you had a job and that job was your business and you lost income and you were without income and you were dry, you don't have the choice to just go up to Georgia and stay in a 4-star and hang out until it's over.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that that's part of it. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, that's a big part of this. There's a lot of people who are losing not just their home, or, you know, where they live and have to be evacuated, but they don't have anywhere to go. And and I don't mean that like they're homeless, but they just don't have the funds and the finances to go stay up in a hotel and like you did before in Hollywood, Florida. So they went to their other residence and they're going to try to hunker down.
Well, there was a story we did earlier this week about the Atlanta Motor Speedway opening up their campground for free.
There you go.
Come on in.
See,
could
be it. Yeah.
Take you whatever you need.
But I think we check in with them next week, see how it went. You know, I think I pray for them, and I right now it looks like it's going to hit all of Florida, but it's possible by the time it gets up to Melbourne, it could also be a 4-3-2 category. So, I mean, I'm saying that that's just better than a 5. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that's not.
Wish them well.
Yep.
Good luck.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we reload this week's news. Lauren Cohn and Ray Long will be here. Talk about the biggest stories, the winners, the losers from this week, overreported stories, underreported, and what story is going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from now. Probably the hurricane, right? But we'll find out. We'll let our, panel make that determination. That's coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. Well, this weekend marks the beginning of the World Music Festival in Chicago. It features some of the best world music musicians throughout the month of September. 40 acts, 23 shows, several venues across Chicago. It's a big deal. And this year, the city has outdone themselves by booking one of the most acclaimed and legendary Afro-pop musicians on the planet. Salif Keita is a singer and guitar player from West Africa. He's credited with being an ambassador of sorts for the country of Mali. His career spans 50 years and includes high-profile awards and accomplishments, including 4 Grammy nominations, a World Music Award, and even a National Order Award from the country of Guinea. Keita is a global megastar who takes his West African roots and combines them with the musical styles of Europe and the Americas and the Middle East and Asia. I mean, really, when we say Salif Keita is a world music star, it's because his music is world music. He'll be on stage tomorrow night at the Concord Music Hall in Logan Square. The golden voice of Africa in studio tonight, Mr. Salif Keita. Mr. Keita, welcome.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Also here, now, Mr. Keita does not, he speaks English. He speaks English fine, but he's got his translator on hand just to make sure. So if you hear that pop in, we've got that there. And also in studio with us, one of the programmers of the World Music Festival, David Chavez. David, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, so why don't we start with you, Mr. Keita. What's it mean to be a part of this festival and to be here in Chicago?
Okay. I think world music is... I'm here because world music means old music, old music, African music, pop music, mixed. It's a festival I can have experience from.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm here, and I would like to be here because I'm come from Africa, and they really need people who can promotes African music everywhere. That's why I'm here.
When I think of Chicago, I don't think of Chicago necessarily as one of the major cities when it comes to world music. But as I mentioned, this is one of the biggest festivals in the United States. Mm-hmm. Do you see as your time in Africa and other places and being, like I said, a global star, do you see that Chicago is becoming more and more of a player when it comes to world music and especially with this festival?
I think Chicago is a town where you can meet many kind of music, because it's not my first time to come here. It's maybe four time to come in Chicago. And when I come, I realized really the Chicago people, they really like my music. So I think they like all kind of, they really like music. If music from Africa, from everywhere, I realize that they love it. They love music.
David, let me bring you in here. I mean, to have someone like Mr. Keita in the festival, to be one of the headliners at the Concord Music Hall tomorrow, what's it mean to be able to bring someone of his caliber to this festival? What's it mean for the festival? And as I said, I mean, this year, you guys continue to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, world music festival in this country.
Yeah, for us, it's a big deal. I mean, it's Salif is an artist that we have been fans of for a long time. I think that, you know, it's almost unbelievable that he's here with us, actually. And I think for the Chicago audience, it's a very special treat, because this is one of the rare opportunities to actually see an artist like this of this caliber. I think it says something about the festival in terms of the fact that we're able to bring in this caliber of artistry for the citizens of Chicago for free. That's something that's rare and doesn't actually happen around the country at all, if not even North America. So it's, we hope to expand that even further as the festival grows.
Is the goal in Chicago to bring, because, you know, if you're going to bring in Mr. Keita to do this show, and he's such a big, big star, are you trying to bring people who are fans of his music, West African descent, are from Africa and are here in Chicago out, or are you trying to expose other music lovers to the music they may not be familiar with Mr. Keita?
It's both. You know, the festival is a community festival, first and foremost, the Chicago Music Community Festival. So we always want to tie in with the community of an artist who's coming into town. But at the same time, we want to be able to bring in a new audience to expand their horizons on international music and, you know, just really foster a better multicultural understanding, right?
All right, let's go back to Salif. Let's talk Mali, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know much about the music scene there. You are the biggest star that I know to come out of Mali. Tell me about the music of Mali. I mean, when we talk about you being a West African singer-songwriter or the golden voice of Africa, what are the influence? What are the music that's usually produced out of the country of Mali?
C'est quoi la musique qu'on produit habituellement hors du Mali? Parle de cette musique et ta musique qui est celle qu'on entend le plus.
I think Mali is a country very rich culturally. We have many ethnic class people, and each ethnic has music. Sonrai music, Bambara music, mm-hmm. Malink music, many kind of music. It's a very rich country and culturally. So We first time, then last time we listened to salsa, pop music, jazz. Don't worry about it. We knew many kind of music from America. Even we don't understand English, we listen to American music since long time ago.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
How much of an influence does American music have on your career? How much does the music that's coming out of here, jazz, other places, how much does that have on your music?
Okay. Me, I started listening to music, American music, when I was 15. You know? But America, James Brown, Wilson Pickett, and Living Color, and many kind of African American music. Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and Scorpion. We listen to many kind of music from America. So,
where does I'm always fascinated about world music, the genre world music, because it usually means it's some sort of international hybrid, meaning it's an amalgamation of a lot of different music coming together to influence an artist. Do you see that playing out? Do you see that getting more popular? Do you see that that's changing? How does the music, the world music genre, evolve moving forward?
La musique, world music, comment tu vois ça évoluer maintenant? Comment ça peut...
When you listen to music now, you can feel American music, Europe music, Arabian music, music from everywhere, because we used to play with many kind of musicians from everywhere. So if you play all the time with a musician, you have to keep experience from them. Mm-hmm. So you can feel it when we make music.
Salif Keita is my guest, the golden voice of Africa, the singer-songwriter and guitar player who is from Mali, is going to be at the Concord Music Hall. He's one of the headliners of the World Music Festival, which starts tonight. Goes through September 24th, is that right? And it's got 40 different acts, 23 different venues, a free festival that the city puts on every year, the biggest world music festival in this country. Salif Keita, an award-winning and accomplished musician, the headliner, a real coup to have him here. You have a tremendous story. We don't have enough time to get into your story, but you as, I mean, your relationship with your country in Mali is a complicated one. Growing up in Mali, you not only did your family and the cultures not look well upon musicians, people who want to be musicians, but also you were born albino. Albinism is has cultural significance in Mali. There's a lot that goes into long-standing cultural traditions. That's a big scandal, and in a way, you had to leave Mali. They didn't necessarily want you there. Is that accurate?
Ta relation avec le pays est un peu compliquée parce que tu étais non seulement musicien et rejeté pour ça et l'albinisme et tout ça. Mais tu à un moment tu as même dû quitter donc le Mali.
Okay. I think it's my parents, they are noble class. They don't want me to make music, but how I can do? I didn't have a choice. I didn't educate too much, and I come in music like because I don't have it. I don't have the choice, and I've been to be albinos in Africa. It's not only my country. It's everywhere in Africa. If you're born albinos, you have problem because they don't know, they don't have any explanation why you come from two black and come white. Just they don't know, they don't have any education about it to know why black men can be white. So sometimes we've been when I know the albinos, they've been sacrificed and rejected, and they have problem, and that's why when I was 25 years old, I went outside the country and stay in Africa and move to France after, because it was really not easy for me to live in my
that country. Experience of growing up with that hardship and having a cultural bias against you in your own country with your own family. Mm-hmm. How did that influence your music? Do you bring that with you? Do you have a chip on your shoulder when you create music and create the start to become a global star? How do you use that background in your music?
When I sing, I sing like I'm crying because I have something to say. Because it's like when people sing jazz, they have something to say.
They have something to say, right?
And when I sing, I have something to say, and I have to protect some people. So I'm really crying when I sing, and I sing about people who needs to be supported.
You eventually came back to Mali as a star, an African singer. Everyone knows you. You come back to your home country after everything that happened to you as a kid. What does it mean to you to be back, and not only be back, but be welcomed, celebrated, to be an ambassador of sorts for Malian culture all over the world? What does that mean to you after the life that you lived in this country?
I'm still thinking about the last comment. Okay. Comment ça c'est pour toi de revenir au Mali et tu es célébré maintenant et tout le monde est là et te félicite et tout après tout ce que tu as.
Okay. I went back in my home because I'm sure I will not be rejected like last time. They know me, and they know I'm popular everywhere. People gonna take care of me, and I come because I think I'm better in my country. Better stay in my country, and I really like to live there to protect the Albanese people.
Salif Keita is my guest tonight, the golden voice of Africa. A legend, a megastar in world music. He is in Chicago, what he said, the fourth time in your life.
Yes.
To be here at the Concord Music Hall, to be the headliner of the World Music Festival, which begins tonight. He's playing tomorrow night at the Concord Music Hall in Logan Square. That's a free show?
Free show.
Free show. How about that? To be able to see one of the biggest stars in all of music on the planet here in Chicago in Logan Square tomorrow night. Salif Keita, a pleasure to meet you, a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to Chicago, and continued success, and have a great show tomorrow night.
Thank you.
And also, David, thanks for being here. And the World Music Festival is running until September 24th. A lot of different acts, but it was 23 or 40 acts over 23 shows.
Yeah, representing over 20 different regions around the world.
Unbelievable.
All for free.
David Chavez, thanks for being here as
Thank
well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Friday, so we reload this week's news. What are the biggest stories? Overreported, underreported, winners, losers. Which story took us down the rabbit hole this week? And which story we remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from now? We've got the right panel in studio tonight. Lauren Cohn is here, longtime Chicago journalist. Lauren, good to see you.
It's good to see you. I wore my Snoopy shirt just because I wanted to have a little bit of fun on a Friday, as opposed to being wearing all black, which I think I wore last time, and it was so depressing. I think that was right after the election.
You like to show your mood with clothes.
Just for you guys.
Sure.
Well, thank
Ray
you.
Long does the same exact thing.
My Snoopy shirt. Actually, Ray. I have a shirt with a little bit of a stain. I just noticed on it.
It's the smoothie he's drinking. It just dripped all over.
You've been wearing that same shirt for 2 months with the stain.
Well,
Ray Long, investigative reporter, Chicago Tribune. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here. Appreciate
it's
it.
Good to be here.
All right. So let's get right to it. I mean, as we go through the categories and we share the stories, it's hard not to say that the biggest story of the week is Hurricane Irma. A hurricane that's not even hit the mainland of the United States. Of course, it's wreaked havoc in the Caribbean and the islands there. But this is a story that has dominated the headlines. I mean, this is probably the best week ever for, I would put winner category for Donald Trump. He doesn't have to do anything.
Right.
Everyone is focused on this hurricane, but it really is the number one.
Oh, yeah. It's I don't think there is a word that can describe it, actually, because they talk about catastrophic and all that. But when you see the pictures and the things that are coming in and you hear about it, it's just beyond belief. It really is.
And you feel like you just saw the pictures of Harvey, right, and the destruction there, and it reminded you of Katrina because it's all on clay, so there's no place for the water to go, and who thought it was going to be that bad? And it took me back to, remember Hurricane Andrew?
Yeah.
And that was a bigger storm but in a smaller scope of area, which when you compare, you know, I remember being on the phone with a reporter. We were live in Cleveland, and she was out there, and as she was doing her live, you know, phoner, the roof blew off of the home she was in. And I mean, and then the thing is, the journalists all go down there while everybody else is evacuating.
Right, right.
But it reminded me of Hurricane Andrew. But this is unbelievable.
It is, and you know, there's a lot that goes with this because Florida, of all places, right, and all of the United States is the state that's probably most prepared for hurricanes because of the past, because of Andrew, because of Wilma, because of other hurricanes that have hit South Florida. So it is interesting that, you know, they're prepared and the Caribbean is also prepared, but not for something that's 185 winds. The biggest story to me was that the measurement, what do you call it? The instruments of measurement were blown away.
Yeah.
Like the idea that they couldn't even withstand what the winds were. They couldn't even measure these winds. That, I mean, it is unprecedented, and it's hard to describe.
Yeah, it's just you feel sorry for him too, because there are so many people there who, you know, don't have the means to get out, or may get stuck in the gas lines on their way out, or had to work the last day before they got out. And you should be hitting that road. I mean, if I were down there, I would hit the road the minute they said hurricane. You know, I wouldn't be waiting until the last few days.
But you wonder. I mean, we've all done this. Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, Floridian culture, I guess that's what I mean by hurricane culture, that they're used to it. I mean, even the size, this is the biggest size they've ever seen, but they're used to projections and it might go back out to the ocean. So in a way, it's a strange I hate to use a perfect storm, but this idea that a lot of people who live in Florida feel like they've been through hurricane watches before.
And they've also been through false warnings. I mean, I was in Hurricane Irene and Sandy covering it on the East Coast, and it was bad enough being a journalist out for 48 hours in that. And those were like 1 and 2 level hurricanes, nothing like this. And I'm amazed how more people aren't leaving. They had 5 million evacuating, but they don't have more. I'm talking to friends right now who are willing to wait it out. But I also think it's that psychological, it's not going to happen to me, I'm going to get through it.
Right.
And even just not what Ray said, there are people that don't have the means, and you would hope that Red Cross or National Guard would get them out. I mean, how many times have we seen the picture of the man on top of his roof of his home that's underwater, and even the helicopter goes to get him, and he doesn't want to leave, right? Where does that come from?
You know, and I will say that this, I mean, there's already talk about, I mean, you mentioned it, Lauren, the idea of Hurricane Harvey and the cleanup there. We're just kind of getting over that, and getting over just meaning the news cycle. They're not going to be getting over that in Houston for years. Then you've got reports of Hurricane Jose, which is right on the I guess the back heels of Hurricane
Irma. There's like
Irma.
A fourth one behind there's, Jose,
yeah.
Right?
But I mean, there is this just amazing amount of weather that's happening this fall into the United States and to this side of the planet.
Well, the size of these have been what's really so mind-blowing, if you will. The idea that you just had Harvey and it took up such a huge size, the size of several states in Texas alone, and then you come back here and you see, I saw a graphic today of Andrew before, the size of the swirl, if you will, that's my technical term, but then it was compared to the size of the swirl with Irma, and it was just a little guy, you know, it's a little ball there next to it. It's just so hard to really get a grip on, and we're sitting up here looking out at the traffic going by here and wondering
complaining
if it's
that
too
it's
cold.
Like 10 degrees colder than it was. I know. It really puts everything in perspective, because when once these things hit, it's not just they lose water, they lose gas, they lose their homes, and if their home is still standing, it's got mold, it's got water, where do you go, how do you make up the money, you lose business. I'm like Ray, I would have gotten out of there right away, but I mean, they had a really tough time getting people out.
It's surprising to me that the state of Florida, with all of the history with hurricanes, has had a tough time. Like, there's just only two highways coming out of there. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. the amount of, I mean, my uncle, I was talking to my uncle earlier, that he's like, I-75 was a parking lot. You can't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And so even people, they say there's still time. The fear now is you want to get in a parking lot and spend a day traveling. Well, what if that thing comes, starts to, the drops start right. hitting the windshield and you're on the street? I mean, that's.
And what are the safest places? I mean, you know, remember we saw, you know, the news, I think, cycle, they were tweeting that, was it Joel Osteen wasn't opening up his
church.
Yeah. Right? So, you know, where are people going or being directed to go if they're on the road and their cars are breaking down on the side? Where do you, you know, is. How are people tweeting out or social mediaing, here, this is a place you could go to that's closest to you? Or say, you can tweet, this wasn't here years ago, you can tweet your location
right.
to somebody and say, what's the closest shelter? Where can I go?
Right. The idea here that the Keys could be wiped out, I think, is another
right.
question. Now, I've gone down to the Key West a couple of times, and I enjoyed it both times, but it's also kind of historical. They get the area down there, they kind of call, I don't know, there's some buzz term for it, but Harry Truman went down there and kind of established a beach, had to go rest at times, and then that whole museum is there, and there is the Hemingway House, and you wonder, are they getting all the six-toed cats out of here? Are they getting all the chickens running up and down the street? I saw the chickens wrapped up.
Oh, in that car. The person was driving out with the chickens wrapped up in newspaper. So that
they wouldn't be fighting each other. It's Jeez. Just an amazing thing.
Well, I think, like all of us, I mean, we'll take time out of our busy weekend schedule to pay very close attention to the storm, which is supposed to hit tomorrow into Sunday. Most of Florida, the Keys, even before that. So,
and they barely made the relief package, right, for Harvey. They were trying to figure out how much money. And
let's make that transition.
Yeah.
And we didn't even mention, and because you had on the list, and I want to take a break, we'll get the conversation about DACA as well. A huge week for immigration. I mean, if you started at the beginning of this week, you'd been like, that's the story. That's what people are going to remember. That's it. Dreamers, here we go. And that has taken a backseat to Hurricane. But we'll talk about DACA as well. 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Ray Long, Lauren Cohn in studio, reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text line. 815 says, people are the same everywhere. Like when we have blizzard warnings in Chicago, people get stuck on Lakeshore Drive because they think it's not going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're right. Human nature. Something to be said about human nature, that the same, we do have the same sort of thing here in Chicago. We just...
Well, remember when they had Hurricane Sandy and Lower Manhattan was evacuated and all the New Yorkers were, and I'm from New York, so I get it. They were all mad. Because it didn't hit as bad as it, you know, ravaged New Jersey, but not Lower Manhattan. Oh, and we had to leave. And
yeah.
Big inconvenience, folks. You know, better safe than sorry.
Well, remember the guy, Harry S. Truman, or Harry Truman was his name, who was living on the side of
St. Helens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Friday night, folks.
Stop drinking that smoothie over there. What's in that? It's in that raspberry thing you got over there.
Yeah. Mount St. Helens. So he stayed there, and the mountain caved over him when it blew out on the sides. It's just amazing.
All right, let's get to some of the winners and the losers. Let's go to winners. You've got a winner. I liked yours, Ray. Why don't we start there, because we'll get to DACA as well, because that fits in every category tonight. But I liked yours, Chance the Rapper. Chance the Rapper gets a win again this week. He seems to be in the winning column a lot, but right here on Michigan Ave, right around the corner here, decides to open a new fast food place, chicken place, and give the money to charity.
Yeah, he was out grilling the chicken, and he was out serving the people, and everybody loved it, and everybody loves Chance. So he just continues to be on this great streak of not only goodwill, but also good PR.
Here's my question, though, on Chance. When he gave all the money to CPS,
mm-hmm.
you know, he got a lot of backlash because a lot of people felt like that's great, but it's also a waste of money. Like, stop giving money to CPS. So would it be good if Chance the Rapper and the other rappers built, like, real stuff on the south and west sides of Chicago? I mean, brought, you know, after-school programs, manufacturing, whatever it is, put their money there?
That'd be better if he passed it out to us. But, you know, I think it's smart to do it to CPS because CPS has had to go through cutbacks too. And I don't believe that it's the total rat hole that a lot of people think it is by tossing money into that. I mean, I think there are a lot of students who can benefit from the types of programs.
And
that
it's
he's
not.
Supporting.
I mean, he's not. I mean, we kind of. I think we. What do we automatically just kind of sugarcoat it or make it very vanilla? But it's specific money, and it was a very little amount of money. I mean, $1 million, $2 million. But the point being, it was for one type of program. I think Chance the Rapper. And in a good way, he's a CPS product, and he does see a lot of demonizing of the school system, and he has a, you know, he has an affinity for that school system, and he wants to give back to it. So there is something to be said that it might be personal to him that he wants to give back to a school system that gave him something.
Yeah, good for him, but every politician in town better be looking behind their back because he could be coming.
Maybe he'll run for office.
Yeah,
he's got.
He could use a new candidate.
I would say, oh, come on, an entertainment
guy. I think Tax Winkle just kind of cut herself out of the race there. She had ballet slippers on, and then the next thing you know,
she. Let's talk about that. We have her in the loser category. And let's talk about DACA. Let's make that transition here because that is very interesting. Because in a way, you would have said on Monday or Tuesday when that actually was. I think it was Tuesday. You would say loser category for Dreamers, for DACA, for everything that President Obama tried to change in immigration policy. But as the story kind of continued to evolve, I'd put it in the winner category in the way that, yes, the DACA, as we know it, the program has 6 months, but they pushed it to Congress. It was bipartisan support. And the president even came out on Twitter and other places saying no one's getting deported. It almost went from what it felt like gloom and doom to this is a good thing for Dreamers and for pro-immigration policy.
I always say that the president's a little like the governor, and that is the last person that whispers in his ear is sort of the way he goes. But then he thinks back, you know, 2 seconds later and sends a tweet on the other side, so you never really know. I think President Trump is, and I'm not a fan of his, right away knew that he was not going to deport 800,000 children who came here, you know, maybe the fault of their parents for coming illegally, but are good citizens and productive citizens. I think he just wanted to, one, slap President Obama.
Right. And a campaign promise. Right. Right.
And a campaign. And then two, he wanted to kick it to Congress because he wants his border security. He's not going to get his wall. He wants tougher immigration or some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. So this is his way of saying, Republicans and Democrats, handle it. I'm giving it to you. And that way, if it doesn't work out, it's just like the health care. You know what? It didn't work out, so you're going to get stuck with Obamacare. I think that's what he did.
And we'll let it fail.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, interesting political maneuver and strategy. And also, I would say, possibly a chance for him to negotiate on some of those things, to say, well, okay, Democrats, if you want this Dreamer stuff, then give me border security. I can see that playing out. You know, but again, unprecedented is a word that gets used a lot this week. We keep continuing, but I'm surprised at how unprecedented this was, because I when that came down, you saw people lining up, the press releases, the cruel was the word that was used by President Obama and others to say, and the way that it's played out, and maybe it's because it was a 180 by some of the politicians involved, doesn't seem that cruel.
Well, it looks like it looks like there's many things going on here, and I don't know where Trump is eventually going to land, right? I have a new theory about him, actually, and that is that he is giving trial balloons. He doesn't really realize they're trial balloons, but he is getting the same kind of effect of trial balloons just by tweeting out one position and then tweeting out a complete
just
flip.
See, yeah, what,
and then
how many
suddenly,
likes gets the win, right?
Yeah, then he's suddenly saying, hey, Chuck and Nancy, you know, the two Democrats, they're all of a sudden doing a good thing. I'm getting a lot of good press. You know, this is a great thing.
Well, he's got, you know, the Sessions in his ear, and then he's got Pelosi in his ear, and he doesn't know. I mean, and does he really care? He just sort of wants it to all work itself out. It's hard to know what he really cares about, what he's true about. What's interesting is that you've got people like Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina working with Senator Durbin on one form of a plan of what they should do. Then you've got, you know, other GOP and Democrat representatives working together. You've got three different plans floating right now, whether they go by age, time that people have been, you know, in the United States, or if you go with, you know, we want trade immigration reform for keeping the program. Do they keep the review every 2 years? I mean, let's just remember that, you know, there's also this optics like, okay, all these 800,000 people automatically are going to become citizens. They have to get a review every 2 years.
Yeah, right.
They still have to have checks. So I think also what this did was it really explained to people what this program is and how this thing works, because people automatically came out. There's a lot of stuff on social media that said, wait a minute, they came here illegally. They don't have any right to be here. Well, let's look at the facts here and understand.
This is really about a pathway that was created by President Obama. And what I find interesting as well, after Congress was ineffective in coming up with an immigration policy, and what the president had asked Democrats and Republicans to do in Congress back in the Obama administration was to come up with something, craft something. They couldn't do it. They failed. He came out with paramount to an executive order and said, this is what it's going to be. Now here we go with the new president saying we're rescinding that because we want to do it the right way, the way the Constitution says. Let's go to Congress. And it feels like a cycle, doesn't it?
He may have put him in a corner. And they may think, they're probably all – each state is getting blowback. Their senators and congressmen, are getting blowback because there's somebody in every community almost around the country where they are caught in the trap here and in this kind of limbo and wonder what is going on.
And these aren't the criminals. These are not the people that you're trying to get sent back and deport back because they're felons. These are, hardworking people who have achieved great success and are contributing to, the economy and, are needed in these jobs.
It's very interesting to me because I wonder what happens if Congress can't get it done. If again, not unlike healthcare, and what does President Trump do? Because immigration is a hot potato. If he comes out in any form, is he kind of at the beginning, he thought maybe at the beginning of his tenure or as presidency, he kind of looked to be a little bit more soft on the concept, saying, oh, dreamers, but he ran on the idea of being hard. So it could. And I also think the Supreme Court, all the states right away sued, as we do now in this kind of like every time a president does anything, we sue. So, I mean, there's a lot still I think the Supreme Court plays a big role in all this.
You would hope, though, from Democrats that they wouldn't look at it and keep this argument like we have to keep this separate. We have to keep separate. We can't combine things because it's so important for these 800,000, so give something to the other side. I mean, that's what the Republicans and Democrats have got to get through their heads. It's the same thing with health care. Yeah. And in that case, it was the Republicans that couldn't agree.
There needs to be good old-fashioned political compromise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We are reloading this week's news. Kind of went through the winners there, DACA and Chance the Rapper. The Cubs also. You have the Cubs.
I have the Cubs,
in the way that they have opened up big leads now, five-game leads. I don't know Pete, what's the – are they doing well tonight? They're not doing well?
It did look like, I saw the first inning before he came in here, and they were down 2-0, and I kept walking.
Yeah, we'll just move on from that.
It is football season.
Yeah, all right.
Well, John Lester had a good game this week.
There you go. We'll continue. We'll come back. We'll get tonight's news from Rob, and then we'll come back, and we will do the losers from this week. It's a long list. Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. Justin Kaufman here with Ray Long, investigative reporter from Chicago Tribune. Lauren Cohn, longtime Chicago journalist. Both in studio, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news. We have gotten through biggest stories, winners, and now it's time for the loser category, which just keeps getting longer.
It's so long.
Let's start with the obvious, and we can go quick on this, and we'll get to the meaty stuff. But Equifax, big lose on that. Not only for the fact that that's the credit, it's a credit agency that essentially you have to give your firstborn to get information out. Yeah. So that's you should protect that information. But then second, the two things I saw, and this is all alleged, but the idea that some of the people at the top knew that was happening and they tried to cash out, the terrible story. Yeah. And then I saw today, and again, it's alleged. I mean, who knows on the internet? I just saw it right before it came on air that even some of their, hey, do you want to help or can we help you kind of stuff that they're putting up is fraudulent or, just trying to get more information.
Said, it isn't. If you really want to check on your status, you don't have to be part of this legal.
I just think that it shines a light on an industry that Americans have had to use for jobs, for homes, for whatever. And you just hope that stuff is protected. And when you find out it's not, you get real frustrated.
But nothing is anymore. I mean, I've gotten notices for things where my information's been hacked. But this is the thing. Like, they came out with this in June. They knew about it, but then they don't tell you. We've heard this with every single story like this that's come out.
Right.
And you sit there and you have to go, okay, now I have to wait to see if somebody steals my identity to find out if there's a problem. Because they're never going to follow up with you
right.
and tell you. Doesn't matter if it's Equifax or whoever it is.
But don't you think that this is where politicians would jump in and could be the heroes of America if they stepped up and said, this is not cool, right? You can't do this Equifax, or we need to have a new rule that says if you got hacked in June, you tell us in June.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some politicians out there writing legislation right now so they can wave it in the next day and say, look, I'm fixing Equifax thing, and even though you got screwed this time, you're going to be okay next.
So, yeah, Equifax is one. The other, and I just thought about this one, and please humor me. Airlines. In the evacuation of Florida to see the price gouging that was going on explained as supply and demand.
Yeah,
they didn't even try to code it.
Is that like, United?
It was American Airlines.
Oh, American.
American
okay.
Airlines.
I expected.
But it was
United.
A lot of them. It wasn't just them. It was just anyone. I mean, so many horror stories of $2,500 to get out of the state. And I understand that, you know, there is a supply and demand issue, and that's economics. But I feel like that's another one. Where's the tweet from Trump?
Yeah, where's the consumer advocate, right?
Yeah. Where'd they come out and say, listen, people are trying to save their lives here. And you're taking advantage. Right. And I read this story as kind of my rabbit hole story, where there are protections in the state government in Florida for that kind of thing. There are protections. But this is the FAA. And this is the American Airlines does not have to do with the state of Florida. It's a United States thing. And there are no protections at that place.
Well, even another airline story this week was about the dragging incident out at O'Hare, right?
No fines. Nothing.
The airline didn't do anything wrong. And maybe in the technical sense they didn't, but couldn't they have said to the airport police, hey, you know, go easy on the guy, you know?
They've been reprimanded in certain forms that I think they've tried to disband or if they have not disbanded the airport police. But this idea that, you're right, I mean, to come out after the fact a couple months later and be like, oh, nope, nothing to see here, folks.
Right.
Everything
right.
is good. It's just all of these stories, all three of those stories point to this sort of disrespect of American consumers. And we expect more, especially out of the airlines. I mean, there's just been nonstop sort of just beating us up over the head with so many stories like this, no pun intended. But the idea that and to essentially in a hurricane where we're all watching the country's feeling for these people to have not just one company, but just all of the companies in an industry take advantage of that. It's sick, right?
And they do that all year round. I mean, it's not like we have a lot of choices in airlines. So it's not like there's a big, you know, marketplace here for prices to come down, and then the loss of morality, you know, in a terrible situation, you know, and then later they'll think about their PR later, like United did, and maybe they'll do something later, and like they did when they brought all the animals over from Houston, you know, they brought a whole bunch to Chicago, so they're going to think about it later.
I just, and again, where's the president? I think this is red meat for him, and 140 characters. Hashtag so sad.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? I feel like that's perfect. I think the whole country.
Never fly American again. Not that he ever did.
Even if it wasn't a specific airline, if it was just like herd of price gouging, people are hurting, so sad. That's not American values. Make America great. I'd be like, finally, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would be it. So I just, again, it just infuriates you that you have this like this communicative tool in Twitter that is being used unpresidential, like that could be used to help consumers, and it's not. So anyway, let's move on to the ones that we have picked. The Illinois politics this week, I put loser. There's a lot of stories in there. And that also includes Tony Preckwinkle. You call Tax Winkle.
I think I stole that from John Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, she had ballet slippers. I think that was part of John's column that made me laugh. And then now she fell from grace with this whole soda tax. And it's the whole thing's ridiculous. We've talked, you know, everyone's talked about this before. This is about revenue. It's not about health. But now she's sort of going after them, like comparing it to the tobacco industry.
Now they double down, yeah.
I mean, come on, Tony. And even if they repeal it and she's got, why is Bloomberg, first of all, in our backyard?
Well, that would be the question I would ask about this, is that it seems like, you know, you're seeing forces line up. And to have Michael Bloomberg actually throwing ads into our market about obesity, and I heard some of them today on the radio, and I also saw some on TV. I mean, it seems to me that they're neither side is backing down to this idea that it is about health. It is about obesity. It is about diabetes. It's not about revenue.
But if it is, then tax everything that causes those. Don't just pick and choose the sweetened beverages that tax everything.
Yeah, you're a nutritionist. I mean,
I'm the biggest person to tell you sugar's bad for you, but it's your choice. I think you know that fruits and vegetables, you know, Justin and Ray, are good for you, and that soda isn't, but you should make that choice. The government shouldn't be telling you, and if you're going to do it, then at least say it's a revenue stream and it's not about your health. I just think her political future is gone now.
I wonder, and I'm not one to I've had contentious interviews, and we've challenged on this issue, but I'm intrigued by this week's advances in the story, because I have seen now you have a former mayor of New York City, big politician, who has come out and said Tony's right. She, you know, we're behind this. I'm glad to see big mayors come out, or big Cook County or board presidents. So there's something to be said about it's not just, you know, a sneaky sort of revenue thing. It seems to be a health fight.
But was he unsuccessful in New York on this one?
He was. He got it was a big, court thing, right?
He won the great big jumbos.
Right.
Yeah.
He wanted them eliminated. Well, you know, I think there's more to it too, because I think that Tony Preckwinkle could have done different things besides go by the ounce or the milliliter whatever it is. I mean, even if you'd done something like a 2 cent a bottle thing, you would have gotten some revenue, or you could have expanded the tax on services or something like that, that probably wouldn't have riled everybody as much. Now, maybe the retailers would have raised the price anyway, but they're looking at their tickets when they come out and they see the price there for, you know, a couple extra bucks on their purchase of soft drinks, and they're outraged.
Well, now there's one, isn't one of these commissioners now running for board president? He wants to push her out of there.
Yeah, and there'll probably be more people like that. And we talked to President Preckwinkle about that, and a lot of the commissioners, you know, they're politically, they look for an opening. They all knew this was coming. They all signed off on it. No one voted. I mean, it was there. It's all ready to go. And now they're using an opportunity where they see that there's some openings to make their political name. But, I mean, that's politics, right? That's how it works.
Well, it seemed to me that it was a close vote. Didn't she have to break the vote?
She might have,
She had to push it over.
Yeah, but she was muscling people over the whole.
Sure,
we don't want people to lose jobs, and she was making threats.
The other thing to remember about this, and it hasn't been talked about too much, back when I covered George Dunn at Cook County and Richard Failing at Cook County, they actually, George Dunn actually pulled out the veto pen. And you know how much it takes to override? It was on abortions at Cook County Hospital or something like that way back many, many moons ago. But the level is an 80% or 4/5 to override.
In the county, huh?
Yeah, so you'd have to really get together a force to
have
override.
You changed, I mean, Lauren, you weren't probably not drinking sugary drinks to begin with. I was. I mean, I guess I didn't really care about it. It was not a big part of my diet.
I think this is mostly pomegranate, by the way.
I will say, it has affected my, it has affected my routine. Meaning, I've been in a couple of places where it would be a fast food for dinner, or like Chipotle or something like that. And they go, "Do you want a drink?" And I'm like, "I'll have water." And I do, and I don't do it. It's 10 cents, and I probably don't even see it, but there's something psychological about the idea of, I don't want to pay that tax.
Well, it's like the bag tax, the 7
cents.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. How many times I've walked out of Jewel with everything in my hand, you know, like, I'm not paying for it.
You're that guy.
Yeah, I am that guy. But, I mean, there's something to be said about it, that if that is the goal, I'm not giving my money to the county, meaning I'm not giving the tax, but it is fitting the description of what Preckwinkle and Bloomberg want. They want a healthier society. So maybe I'm sort of like the guy that they're looking at.
Well,
I don't know.
The parallel also is the cigarette tax. You just keep raising it and raising it, and fewer people do it, but you keep raising it, and then you have the same amount of revenue coming in.
Yeah.
You raise it some more, and you have fewer people smoking.
But that's tobacco products. If you're going to say sweetened beverages, so it's not just soda, it's all of them out there. And then, of course, it's the ones, if it's in the store, but if the barista makes it, it's also
that's
confusing,
where they mess it up, right?
They totally mess it up. But then, okay, so what about cakes and cookies and candy bars
and Twinkie
foods
tax.
With preservatives? You
got
to tax all of it then.
Right. Well, that's what that, I mean. Here's what I got. 312 says, what about, we tax alcohol, tobacco, gambling, why not sugar? But it's very interesting, because they say, why no weigh-in from Rahm on the sugar tax? You know, he's kind of stayed out of it, surprisingly.
He doesn't want Tony to.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting. That's a Democrat. It's a move. Michael Bloomberg. I mean, it's.
He's letting Tony go
to
down
be,
on her own.
Right down his.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Wheel. Go ahead and dangle on the other side of the building.
He needs revenue, too.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We'll reload the news. We'll come back and let's stay with losers. We'll stay with losers. Oh, there's so much. But Illinois politics, because you can talk about the story that J.B. Pritzker and the Blagojevich connection that was in the Tribune this week, Daniel Biss and Carlos Ramirez Rosa, the alderman, and dropping him as a lieutenant governor candidate. Lots going on the Democratic side of the gubernatorial race early. I mean, they just started petitions.
Right. Yes. They're going to have to scratch out the names now and start over.
All right, so we'll have that conversation coming up right after the break. Stay with us. Hey, it's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, we're here. 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohn in studio, as well as Ray Long. We're staying with the losers. There's a lot of losers to get through. But there were some interesting ones. I before we get to Illinois politics stuff, I thought that the not a good story for the Las Vegas police after the McGregor-Mayweather fight, that Michael Bennett, a defensive end an outspoken defensive end for the Seattle Seahawks, as he tweeted out, "I was a black man in the wrong place at the wrong time. The Las Vegas police don't know who he is. They think that the gunshots went off in some area.
So they grabbed him.
And the things that were said to him, and there's video of it. It's just not a good story. Now, the Las Vegas Police Department has said, well, we want an investigation into this. We don't think that Michael Bennett's saying, you just saw a little piece of the video. Much more happened here than being led on. But the overall consensus is this is just a really bad look, especially around Colin Kaepernick. Michael Bennett sits during the national anthem. This is why there is protests.
Yeah, and you can understand why. This plays into a narrative, unfortunately, that is true, that we see all the time. And this is something that our nation is still struggling with and needs to get a grip on and needs to get an idea of how that we're all equal, like it says, you know, like we're taught to be.
It's tough. It's tough, too, because I understand the Las Vegas Police Department being like, well, we're not going to comment on an investigation. Yeah. They're not going to say anything. The police union had asked the NFL to investigate.
Yeah, they're putting
Michael Bennett
on Roger Goodell.
Yeah, and they said, no, we're not getting involved in this. So, I mean, they're automatically going to look like the bad guy because Michael Bennett's story is one that we've heard many times before that has been proven true. So, and there is video showing it happen, and you hear Michael Bennett saying, I didn't do anything. And it's just right as the NFL season is about to begin, you have, instead of stories about how great the athletes are and what to expect on the field, you have this story. You have Ezekiel Elliott, the running back, you know, for the Dallas Cowboys, who was suspended for domestic violence, but then he's, you know, what do you call it? He's appealing the suspension, and then they're like, there's questions about the accused. I mean, it's everything that you don't want involved with your sport is on display.
Yeah, it's a sad, weird time, and when you have the national context here of all these different things, we in Chicago, of course, immediately go back to Laquan McDonald about the really bad things that can happen and go wrong when police just don't take care to be human.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Illinois politics, some loser stories there. Senator Daniel Biss, who's running on the gubernatorial, the Democrat side, he picks a lieutenant governor in alderman of the 35th Ward, Carlos Ramirez Rosa, a progressive, a delegate for Bernie Sanders when he ran for president. Seems like a way to court the progressive vote and say, Daniel Biss is your candidate. Let's get going. And then about a day later, issues about Israel and everything that goes into divestment is thrown around, and vetting is thrown around, and he reverses course. Carlos dropped from the ticket. Not a good look for the first week, official week of the campaign.
Well, it doesn't look good that he doesn't vet, but, you know, when they talk these different, and I don't even know what their process is, because it kind of reminds me of the governor when he brought people in and then he had to let people go, the bodyguard or some of these other folks in the communications department, because he didn't know their positions, and suddenly it is a publicity nightmare for him. And in this case with BIS, you either, you know, are pro-Israel or you're not. I mean, you have to explain, are you for to a Palestinian state and you're not anti-Israel, or are you for these other subcategories? And so it wasn't really explained, and Rosa wasn't really explaining his position very well, and I don't think BIS had time. The optics of it looked so bad, he just had to let him go.
Well, the hardest part about it to me is that if Daniel BIS, and I like Daniel BIS, I like him as a state senator, and he's been a guest on this program, but, I mean, it's not a good start, regardless of what the issue is.
Right.
Regardless, right. The idea of having to reverse course on a decision that is really that what this is all about is about judgment and about the idea of would you be the right person to be running the state. Not a great look. And Ray, you've covered politics. Oh, yeah. This rarely happens.
Yeah. Well, just a few years ago, the lieutenant governor for the Democrats was chosen by the people, and we started to look at him real close, and suddenly it turns out that there's a lot of questions about his background, and the next thing you know, he's sitting down with Michael Madigan, the House Speaker and Party Chairman, and then suddenly he's off the ballot, right? And they had to get somebody else. Unfortunately, they came up with a good candidate, Sheila Simon.
That's right. I forgot about it. What was that guy's name?
Oh, man.
I know. I love that guy. He was he was fighting for his life.
That's what happens. You
he
know?
Had the big press conference on the Super Bowl. I remember that. It was opposite the Super Bowl in 2008.
Oh, yeah. Had his kid there and everything. So, yeah.
I guess will it matter come election time, though? Will it all
maybe
be?
Not.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, it would matter if BIS had kept his running mate that he first chose, because it would have been a distraction that he didn't need.
Yeah, but I also will push back, because I think that, unfortunately for BIS, progressives really like Carlos.
Yeah.
They like him. He's the guy. He represents the authentic voice. So the problem that he has right now, I think, is that he went to that progressive mantle that Bernie Sanders were going to run that campaign, and then he angered half that constituency.
Well, you're right.
And so what does he do now? Yeah. I mean, what kind of candidate is Senator BIS? Is he for the progressive? The progressives are like, you dropped a lieutenant governor over a position that progressives endorse.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right. And he is a very valuable lawmaker. And he's a guy who goes into the nitty gritty. He tried to tackle the pension issue and a variety of other things. So he is a well-regarded state lawmaker, state senator, who actually knows what's going on and could probably walk in up to speed with all the issues, as opposed to the other candidates who are jumping in.
Smart guy. Well, see, the other side, the front runner, J.B. Pritzker, and I've heard, I mean, people have told me, they get angry because they feel like the Chicago Tribune just put a hit piece out on him about his connection to Rod Blagojevich. You know, that was a big piece this week from the Chicago Tribune, the idea that, and it's not the first one, there have been second or third one about J.B. Pritzker's connection as a big fundraiser to Rod Blagojevich. I mean, it's the blueprint, right? I mean, this is going to be the Republican blueprint. They're going to drop stories in the lap of the newspapers and say, please keep looking at J.B. Pritzker and Rod Blagojevich.
These are not being dropped out. I mean, we have legitimate digging that's going on here. And my colleagues who pop these stories have dug in. The previous one, that went out in May, I believe, and the Tribune disclosed that the FBI had secretly recorded telephone conversations between Blagojevich and Pritzker in late 2008 as part of an investigation into Blagojevich's attempt to sell the U.S. seat that was vacated by Obama when he was elected president. So that was legitimate. We ran out copies of the tapes. That wasn't dropped in our lap. Everybody has this big conspiracy that we're just standing around waiting for softballs to drop into our gloves.
Right,
that's
right.
Not
and it's
happening.
Also the response. I mean, Pritzker, I don't know anything about it. It was sort of like when he was standing in front of his building and, you know, talking about you, Pat Brady, out in front of that one, saying, you know, what he had done in terms of paying taxes on the property. And, well, I didn't know. I mean, he's sort of taking that stance, and it's a little arrogant.
Yeah, the the thing that came out this week, of course, is another issue where J.B. Pritzker has made a point in many of his appearances where he talks about the fundraising he did for the Holocaust Museum, which is a fantastic facility in Skokie. And now the timing of one of the grants that the state under Blagojevich gave out to the Holocaust Museum came within a few days of a large campaign contribution.
Which a lot will say is politics 101. I mean, we see that with the story today in the Chicago Tribune about Mayor Emanuel and his development. Let's do this. Let's take a break, and because I want to get to the news tonight. We'll come back because that's a great way to pick up, because we can talk about overreported and underreported. The story today with Rahm Emanuel, very similar in this way of the way that politicians and fundraisers and developers and everyone just sort of interact in the city. It's all legal.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, right? Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news with Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune, longtime Chicago journalist. Lauren Cohn in studio, 312-981-7200. We have gotten to the point where we talk overreported and underreported stories, overreported. I mean, hard to say weather because it's a very important story, but I mean, you look up and weather is everywhere. And it kind of has an end of days feel right now, but it feels like it is a little bit overreported in the way that it'll go 24/7 CNN everywhere.
Yeah, they have to do the wall-to-wall coverage, and the weather people love it because it gives them something to do, you know.
Right.
They got to outdo each other.
We're doing wall-to-wall weather coverage here in Chicago on it, too. Yeah. I mean, it's at a point where you can't turn around.
It affects everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, there was an earthquake in Mexico, and there was fires out in the coast, on the other coast, the West Coast.
Yeah, right. The other story, too, and Lauren, you and I both had this one, Hillary Clinton and her memoir, leaked memoir. It's leaked. No. Pass. Moving on. Overreported. Yeah. No, don't care. The blame game of why you lost the election. We know why you lost. Nobody likes you. You got to move on. I mean, and there are people that voted for it, and it's fine. Just I'm trying to be objective. I don't want to read Mitt Romney's memoir. You know, this idea of someone who loses the election and then continues to be in the cycle. Let's set precedent for when we have a new president and Donald Trump is no longer president and we don't go to him for everything. I just feel at a certain point.
It's the bitter book. It's like, get over it. She just wants to be back on the stage waving at the crowd. You lost. And this whole argument, that silly show with all the women on in the morning. The View. Okay. They were totally defending that she has the right to come out with a book. Of course she does.
Anybody does.
But, you know, and they said that, oh, well, she really did win. Well, no, you didn't. You know, we have an electoral college. It's not the way the system works. Stop saying that she won and that President Trump shouldn't be in office. That's not the way it works.
No.
Scott Cohen was the guy, by the way.
Scott Cohen, right. Yes, right. I remember he did the press conference that he had was at a nightclub, and it was called Vertigo. That was the name of the nightclub that was right here on State Street or right in this area. That's where he had his press conference to say he wasn't running anymore.
Oh, yeah. It was like opposite the Super Bowl or something like that. It was very strange.
It was very bizarre. Anyway, we digress. Back to Hillary
Clinton.
Hope you were listening.
Hairnet back on and sit on an island and cry.
Yeah, for me, it's more about there's not much insight that comes out of this stuff when you're blaming about what went wrong and what we kind of.
Why don't you take some blame on yourself, right? Why don't you apologize?
I just think it's the most sort of overreported story. We've all heard the story every single day to the idea that it's like if you're interested in that story, buy the book.
Yeah,
but I don't need to hear headline after headline after headline.
Bernie Sanders was on Colbert last night, and he said, you know, can we stop talking about 2016? We have a lot of things we got to tackle. Yeah. Right.
That's last year. All right. Let's shift to underreported. We got some big stories. Bruce Rauner and the $6 billion.
Right.
Financing deal.
Right. Basically, the state through this complex long-term deal that they finally worked out in Springfield came up with the idea that why don't we authorize the state to go out and borrow money? Because why? The state increases the amount of interest they pay everybody they owe by 1% a month. Now, I think they give a month or 2 months grace period, but you know, after 12 months, that'd be 10 or 11%. It keeps going up. So they figured, well, if we just borrow at a flat rate, say even at 3, 4, or 5%, we're going to be saving money. So they did that.
Right.
But it is still a huge chunk of money that they're buying, and they got to pay it off, too. And in the shaky finances that they have, there's all kinds of questions of whether it's a gamble or not.
It's important because
yes,
we're
absolutely.
Talking about a lot of debt, a lot of unpaid bills, so it is important to do. It's just not really the headline that you want to read, and I think that's probably it's underreported because no one wants – I mean, the city of Chicago, too. I mean, there seems to be more political energy and capital put into borrowing plans and strategy than getting us out of this,
this
cycle.
It is important, as you said, because there's social services that need to be paid that have been basically – putting their second and third mortgages out on their buildings to try to get through this rough patch in which the state legislature and the governor have not been able to get it together until recently.
But I think we're just all mentally exhausted because the reality is there's no win for anybody on this, and we're all going to pay the piper and pay the price. And that's why you're frustrated because there's nothing we can do, and our taxes are going to keep going up to pay for all this mismanaged money. I even think the governor's probably banging his head against a wall as a businessman. He couldn't get anything done. So there's just no win on this.
Yeah. One win that could potentially come to Illinois would be Amazon. The idea that a headquarter, second headquarter, this is your story you've had in a couple categories, but for underreported as well. I mean, it really was because it really was a national story. And they said, well, maybe Chicago, maybe Illinois. But you say this has got a lot of political this is a big weight for Emanuel and for
it's the
Browner.
Bromance for Governor Rauner and Rahm Emanuel. It's a win for them, considering the positions they're both in, wanting to run for re-election, not being very popular. You know, the governor, people concerned, is he flip-flopping? Which side of the aisle is he really on lately? And what's happened with his communications team? And then Rahm's unpopularity. Get Amazon here, and it's a win for both of you. You get the big money. You get the jobs. We just reinstated the Edge program.
Right.
So giving tax incentives, you know, if that's the way, I think it would be a huge coup. It would be great for the city. And it's not just Rahm saying, oh, McDonald's moved his headquarters downtown. It's we really beat other cities and got the big, you know, the big
If Chicago and Illinois lose out to L.A., to another city, to Cleveland, to somewhere, another Midwest.
Indiana.
What does that say? I mean, is it that big of a calculation in a sense that would make Rauner and Emanuel weak in re-election campaigns?
Well, I think it depends on, I mean, Ray, the you're better with the numbers, the incentive package as to why. I mean, so people get the national perspective is we have a lot of high crime, but it's in one certain area of the city. It's still a wonderful place to be. It's still a livable place compared to other major cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they can't make that argument, but they've got to make the financial package for Amazon work.
Yeah, I think it's going to blow the doors out of the state and probably city treasury. And they don't even have cash inside the safe anyway. But they'll find some way to do giveaways, whether it's through property tax breaks or whether it's through income tax breaks. For 50,000 people, that's not just 50,000. That would be spouses and children and could
just
help
the construction to buy it,
right,
to build it.
Right, to build it and jobs. You know, this would be a major coup, and Rahm especially has to be lusting for it because he wants to make this the big digital city.
There you go. Lauren Cohn, Ray Long in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's do which stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, reloading this week's news with Lauren Cohn and Ray Long. 312-981-7200. We're to that point where we talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole. I mean, it's a story that just came out today. It was in the Chicago Tribune about Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the Tribune, did a tremendous job. Tremendous job of really getting meticulous and looking at the times, the people, and all the different scenarios that go into essentially fundraising and what that gets you in the city of Chicago. The mayor's office was in the article saying, hey, everything we do is legal. Essentially, that they said that over and over and over, and it's true. But it was this question of when the mayor would have a meeting with somebody and get some money, and a couple days later, that development company would get a deal. And once again, it just it reminded me of the long-standing tradition in this town where the mayor and the developers, the real estate developers, are in the same business. They got their hands in everywhere. The amount of legal, like the lawyer, the firms, everything that's mentioned in here, the money that is given to the mayor of Chicago for fundraising, for political, for re-election campaigns, it's startling.
Yeah, it's amazing. It reminds me, you know, one of the fashionable terms is pay to play, right? One of the terms that came out of this city years ago was pinstripe patronage. And that's really kind of what we're getting into here, where you give a little, you give something back. Oh, we're really not coordinating. This has nothing to do. One has nothing to do with the other. And nobody goes to make the quid or the pro or the quo or anything show up. So there's something just one off or two off or three off, enough off that you can't make that this is for that.
Lauren, the mayor's office in this article, they essentially say the mayor, when he first was elected, he made laws more transparent. he had an ethical change in the way things were done before him. But there seems to be he's within his ethical changes, but he has changed. He's evolved. The mayor's office has evolved in how they are able to get money and be able to use that. I mean, to have a return on investment.
Well, it's just it's the whole idea that the transparency is the hope I don't get caught, right? It's the same thing with the video in Laquan McDonald. It's okay until I get caught, and then I got to backtrack, right? So in this case, it's a culture. It's gone on. They can't pin me. It's illegal. It's unethical. And there's a whole culture of people at City Hall who know how to weave and get around all these things.
I guess I asked the question. I'll be the devil's advocate here. Is it unethical? Is it illegal? Or is it just politics? I mean, anyone who's giving money at the scale we're talking about, thousands of dollars, to a mayoral candidate is not doing it because they believe in politics or the system. They're doing it because they want some sort of favoritism, and that's politics,
okay,
right?
Okay, your constituents, you're in a neighborhood. So you're in a neighborhood, let's say you're the West Loop, and the whole neighborhood doesn't. This happened in my area. They don't want these high-rises, right?
Right.
So maybe the alderman comes out, and he holds a bunch of meetings, and he wants to listen to the people. But he really has his mind made up because he wants the campaign contribution. So then the developer gets his big zoning permit and his high-rise permit. And so what about all those people who live in that area? You know, you have to answer to us, too.
Right.
So, yeah, you're getting the big money, and you need that for the campaign. But remember, you need those people's votes as well.
Ray,
let me just, the election is February 2019, right? So this is a ways down the road. So if anybody's thinking that Rahm Emanuel might not be wanting to run, then he's already loading it up. And let me just read a couple of points from this great story by Jeff Cohen and Bill Ruthart. And that is, Emanuel has collected $3.1 million in high-dollar contributions, and more than $2.1 million of it, nearly 70%, has come from 83 donors who have benefited from actions at City Hall.
I've covered enough of Chicago politics to know this isn't the first mayor that's done this.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, there's
right.
other mayors. But I guess for me, what I found to be interesting was let's talk about the West Loop. And full disclosure, I live in that community. The idea that he talks about this neighborhood fund, I forgot the name of it, there's a name of it, that he essentially says to developers, if you want to break the zoning code and you want to build that 40-story high-rise condo that nobody in the community wants, you can do so, but you have to pay an extra fee, and I'm going to take that fee and we're going to reinvest in impoverished communities with that money. Of course, developers are like, yeah, sounds good. You know what I mean? Like, and then the skeptics in us are like, well, let's see where that money goes. What are you talking about?
Right.
As some aldermen have said, it's a slush fund for the mayor. But the point being, even if you believe that that's the case, you truly believe that he's giving money. The idea that you would tell one community, I don't really care if you're against high rises in your community, because I'm going to get this, I'm going to take that money and put it somewhere else. And that's all from people who are giving him campaign contributions. It just all kind of, it feels like
makes you want to go home and take a shower, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. I find it to be a head scratcher. I guess that's it. You know, like in terms of, I'm not sure what's trying to be accomplished there, except for some sort of investment on return from the campaign contribution.
They like the mayor because he does what they like, and he likes them, and he does what they like. So it's one of those.
It's one of those
things. Yeah, it's the Chicago way. It never goes away. All right, the other story is about going away. The other story about
transition. Man.
This guy, and I don't even want to say his name because it's really we can go short on this, but it's becoming a viral hit. A guy writes for Huffington Post that he's leaving Chicago. He doesn't like this town. He moved here from San Francisco, and bye bye. He's like, this town has a lot of problems, and it wasn't even.
I've been to San Francisco recently. There's homeless people everywhere. They let everybody out of the mental institutions.
You would think
it's
that
awful
you
in
would
San
think
Francisco,
that
and
this,
I love it there.
It would be more societal ill stuff, but it's not. He was hit on his bike. He couldn't pick up women in a bar.
now we're getting to the
real
story.
And it just he talked about our complex being a small city, and everything is it doesn't matter. The rabbit hole point to me is I'm upset that we take the bait. That Chicagoans on social media get all riled up, and we say, because it's once a year or so, maybe 2 years, that a BuzzFeed or a Huffington Post or other place, they like to publish these because they're huge hits. They get huge page views. We go crazy. They laugh all the way back to the bank. And I feel like let's shed that second city mentality of getting riled up about someone leaving our city. Millions leave this city every day. That's hyperbole, of course. But millions come in, and we're a big city, and there's a lot of people that can make it and can't and don't and won't and will and should and could. You know, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I don't think we need to document one person's story about how they didn't make it, and then they have to turn on the city, and we get all riled up about it. It just makes me –
I like the face on the guy, though. Like, I didn't even read the story. You know more than I did. I saw it, and I just bypassed it, but I knew what you were talking about. But I just liked his face, the way he looked. He just looked so angry.
He had a faux
hawk. Dude, you should go back to another place because this is the Midwest, and we at least smile in the Midwest if we're going to leave.
I mean, his point was he didn't like the Midwest, and that's fine. Good.
What's not to like?
But good. I don't care. Like, I mean, the idea, the irony is that he's going to New York.
Right.
You know, good luck.
Good luck.
But that's the thing. You're not reading in BuzzFeed or Huffington Post or those places or any place or why I'm leaving New York. We know why you're leaving New York. Couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't make it in Chicago. So end the story. It's a dumb story. Don't click on it.
And why'd you leave San Francisco?
Yeah, right. That's what he says in the article. That's what Chicagoans all say. That's why did I leave San Francisco? But I agree with you. All right. So last, let's get to the final category. I think it's pretty simple, but maybe we'll change it up. Which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 500 years from tonight or this week? Ray, what do you think?
Yeah, the Cubs repeat for the World Championship.
It starts this week. the sweep of the Brewers, right? Yeah. Right.
Actually, let me look up at the score, right?
Yeah, well, it's not going well.
But, you know, it was 2-0 against them. But obviously it's Irma. And the double action here of Harvey and then Irma and the catastrophe that this country has had to deal with here because of it.
Do you think Irma and Harvey will be on the scale and remembered as much as a Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, because you look at the devastation and the years it took for Katrina to rebuild, and you're looking at that in Texas as well. And I mean, who knows what Florida and the cost it's going to be, but people always reflect on where was I when this happened. And it's not just I'm a resident there, I have a relative there, I have a home there, I like to travel there. And then it's going to be, well, we care about those communities, let's go travel there and help the economy there. So, yeah.
I wonder if that's Lauren, you have that as the same story that will be remembered?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Number one.
Number one.
You got to wonder if Rahm is going to look at the wildfires out west, and he's going to look at the floods in Texas and the hurricanes in Florida and say, you know, we don't have those things here in Chicago. Yet. Amazon, why don't you move out
right
here?
Right. I thought you were going to say, I thought he was going to go to city council tomorrow and be like, let's get a fund going. Because Chicago is not immune, especially with a winter coming up here. And we also, I mean, in the last couple of years, when the summer ends and the fall starts, and there is some nasty weather that comes through Washington, Illinois, and the tornadoes was November, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so we're not immune to that in the Midwest. And that's what I would, if I were the state and the city, I'd be like, you see what's happening there? That's probably going to happen at some point or another in our area. Again, let's get our ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray Long, Chicago Tribune investigative reporter. Lauren Cohn, longtime Chicago journalist. You guys, great job tonight.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Reloading this week's news. All right. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Prep Sports Plus takes over. Sam Panionovic, Kevin Powell. It's going to be an interesting here we go. What is this going to be, week three? How about it? I was at a picnic, Labor Day picnic, out in Park Ridge. And the family that was there was talking. They were all talking about their nephew. Their nephew was a quarterback at Maine South, right? Maine South's one of the big schools. And I was like, I know, because Sam Panionovic told me all about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, we were talking about him. So I felt like I was in the inn thanks to Sam and Kev and Prep Sports Plus, you know? Like, I feel Prep Plus Chicago, right? But I feel like otherwise I wouldn't know what was happening, but I was like, oh, yeah, I know what's up. So that's coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. Before we get there, though, Tracy Swartz is the ink columnist for the Chicago Tribune. She joins us every Friday with our segment called Reality Check, where we take a look at the storylines in reality television with a local flair. We got some this week, including a snub. Is it considered a snub? Tracy, good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I need to get to the bottom of this because I was trying to figure it out. So I've learned so much from you, Tracy, in the last 3 months about reality television. We've been doing this segment. And I know the formula of how The Bachelorette and The Bachelor work. You've explained it to me. You've enlightened me. But it's the runner-up on The Bachelorette is supposed to get The Bachelor. And if I'm not mistaken, that's our trainer. That's our physical trainer who was the former Chicagoan who almost won but wasn't that interested, right?
Right. So that's typically the formula. It's the runner-up. Sometimes it's maybe the person who comes in third place gets to get the title role for the next season. But basically what happened was, according to a lot of rumors, a lot of reporting, the guy who came in second place was the guy Peter, like you mentioned, the former Chicago trainer. And the reason he came in second place is because he was not prepared to propose to the Bachelorette Rachel on the finale. And this was devastating to fans because that couple seemed to have a stronger connection than the guy that she picked, which was Brian.
Right.
But basically, she told the two guys on the finale that she wanted to be engaged. And basically, Peter wouldn't propose, so she chose Brian. So this was kind of a problem for the producers of The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, because they want to have an engagement at the end. So they did not feel like this guy, if they chose he wasn't going to propose.
He's not reliable.
Even if you know it's not going to work out, and so many of them don't, you got to go through the motions of the big proposal.
You got to play the game, right? You got to play the game.
Don't you got to go on the after show, hand in hand. You got to go on Good Morning America. You have to show off the ring. You have to pretend that you are in some, you know, months, years, 6 years, somewhere down the road, you are going to get married, or at least say you're going to get married.
Right. I guess that makes sense because, truthfully, if you were a producer of one of those shows and this the format that they're working in is love and the contestant at the center is not into love or not ready for it or not willing to buy into the premise, you're gonna skip that dude, right?
So it was a lot of back and forth in the tabloids. You could see that the Bachelor producers were trying to, you know, swing things that look like maybe he could at some point be the Bachelor. And then sort of in the last minute, they said he wasn't going to be the Bachelor, and he has a rabid fan base, rabid.
Peter does?
So, yes, oh, big, big fan base. And a lot of people were super disappointed, and he kind of acknowledged that he blew it on social media. He sort of mentions that fear got in his way. And so now he will go back to Madison, Wisconsin to be a personal trainer there. And a guy who was on The Bachelorette in 2012 is going to assume the mantle of The Bachelor.
Now, to be fair, classic year. I mean, that was a really great Bachelorette, 2012.
If you can remember who The Bachelorette was in 2012, bonus points to you, because I've been in this job for 2.5 years, and I've covered 8 seasons of this franchise. That's how long. Just in 2.5 years, we've had 8 seasons full of 30 contestants.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a long 2012 was a while ago.
I remember this one. It was the one with the jacuzzi, and then they rode horses, and then they did jet skis, and he took them home to a small town. There was a cowboy hat, right? I mean,
this guy is a player. He is a so many women already have come out of the woodwork to say that he was dating this woman while he was dating me. Well, you know, and as is the case, a lot of seasons you have at least one contestant or one lead who was dating someone who didn't realize that they were no longer dating them until they were announced as the Bachelor.
And Rob Martyr, as he just explained to us, does not like the guy because he was a bad race car driver.
Yeah, he's a professional race car driver. His dad was a famous race car driver. He lives in Arizona. The last couple of Bachelors have been from the Midwest. So this is a shift in terms of casting, and they have, you know, they haven't started casting yet or haven't announced casting yet for this new season. I'm sure there'll be at least a couple of Chicago people. All right. We usually get them on, and it usually starts in January.
So we should expect a lot of shots of Sedona, maybe some turquoise, a lot of turquoise, maybe some joke T-shirts like Arizona's a dry heat and it's a skeleton. Like, that's what we should expect from Arizona.
At this point, I mean, he is the first salt and pepper bachelor. He's in his mid-30s, so maybe his ways will be tamed down more, so you won't see crazy, you know, shots in Arizona.
All right, there we go. All right, so Tracy Swartz joins us for Reality Check. We're after Labor Day, so here comes the new television season. When we talk about fall television, and is it the same concept that it has been, where there will be a bunch of brand new reality shows that come out because from the network and from other places, because fall is the right time to introduce these shows?
You definitely get there is a summer reality cycle, which is your smaller reality shows, your cooking shows, your Bachelor in Paradise. And then you've got your bigger juggernauts, which is usually your singing competitions. So we have, and your, unfortunately, your dancing competitions. So there's the new season of Dancing with the Stars this fall. There are 13 people, none of them from Chicago, which was a change from last season when you had David Ross and Mr. T, who are both tied to Chicago. Then you've got The Voice coming up that starts later this month. And Jennifer Hudson, who's from the South Side, she is going to be a mentor this season for the first time on The Voice. And you've got at least a couple of people from Chicago who will be auditioning for that show. And then we're closing in on the reboot of American Idol.
Right, I was going to ask about that. Right. Who are the judges on that? Is it going to be Katy Perry?
It's going to be Katy Perry, but they haven't announced the other judges. I will tell you, though, on Monday at McCormick Place, they're holding auditions for this reboot.
So this is going to be the shot they do where it's my favorite shot of American Idol, where they show we're in Chicago and they go real fast through the line. And then they randomly pick somebody and that person wins like that. My name is Pete Zimmerman. I'm a producer at WGN, and it's my dream to sing country crooner songs. I'm kind of like a mix between Toby Keith and Tony Bennett. And I just hope the judges like me. Well, here it is. And then Pete comes out and he jumps out with the yellow. They give him a yellow card and he flips out. I know, I've seen it.
Well, I don't know how they're going to do it in the reboot, because the whole reason for the reboot was supposed to be enough time passed between the end of American Idol and a reboot where you could actually reboot the show. So it would be something completely different. But the show just ended last year. Not enough time has passed. They're having trouble finding judges. I mean, they got Ryan Seacrest back, but their two big American idols, Kelly Clarkson and Jennifer Hudson, went to The Voice. So
yeah,
I think that they're scrambling a little bit in trying to build this judging panel.
Two words. Ready? Kid Rock. Get him in. He's a huge, I mean, he's a politician now. He's in front. He'd be a great judge.
He would be definitely a foil to Katy Perry. I cannot think of someone more opposite of Katy Perry.
Beyond the singing shows and the dancing shows, what about shows like old staples like the Kardashians and the sort of veteran shows of reality fame like Survivor, things like that? Do those come back around this time?
Survivor is coming back in a couple of weeks, and we have a guy who was briefly on the Bears, and he also played football for U of I, Alan Ball. So he is one of the castmates, and I think that is season 35, if that tells you how long the shows have been around. And it is really sad sometimes when I'm typing these, like, season 35, season 32. It's just a lot. So that is coming back. The Kardashians, yes, are coming back. They are actually celebrating 10 years of being on television.
That's it?
This fall, 10 years.
Wow. And this is going to be a big season for Kanye West, I would assume, right? Like his storylines will come out of here? Or that already happened?
Every season is a big season for Kanye West. He typically avoids that show. So they kind of just talk about him in passing.
Oh, okay.
Kanye is still alive. Good, let's move on.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm looking forward to all of the reality television that I will not watch this fall, but I look more forward to Tracy checking in with us to let us know what happened on said shows, especially how it pertains to Chicago. Tracy Swartz is the ink columnist for the Chicago Tribune. She joins us every Friday. Tracy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Gonna do it tonight.
I love my pillows.
Yeah. That's it for the download. We'll be back on Monday night. We will be doing our first. I'm very excited about this, but we're going to be doing post Bears wrap ups Monday nights with Adam Hogue. Adam Johns is in for Adam Hogue on Monday night. But perfect night to go over what happened on Sunday. Believe it that the Bears are the season is here. How great is that?
So what does that mean? You guys are going to do like an hour of Bears talk?
Yeah. Like that's take awesome. Some calls, right?
It's never enough Bears talk. Even if they're not winning, you can talk Bears.
I feel like Hogue and Adam Johns, those guys, you guys come in once in a while. You guys will break down what happened in the game. I'll just talk about like what was funny in the commercials.
Yeah.
Or like the observations of watching.
Don't sell yourself short, JK. You know your sports.
Thank you, buddy.
You do though. So me and Sam were actually talking about this, weren't we? Like a half hour ago.
Yeah.
Like
he brought me in last night.
It's always fun talking to Justin because he knows sports.
I do.
But like you know what you know. Meaning you don't try to.
I know cricket. I know.
Right. But you're not trying to be Adam Hogue and give us the X's and O's.
Yeah, I don't know.
I also just want to say, every time I hear 87.7 on this airwave, part of me dies on the inside.
All right, terrible memories,
man.
R.I.P. in peace.
Like 87.7, and part of me just wants to cry in a corner.
That predates me. So Sam Panionovic, Kevin Pyle in tonight.
I thought it was
Chicago.
A great radio station.
It wasn't here. All right, so big, here we go. High school football. Yes. You guys are up next here in the 10 o'clock hour. This is week 3.
Conference play.
Let me ask you, as you get to this part of the season, are there surprises? Are there teams you thought were going to be running away with it that aren't? Are there teams that you thought were going to be terrible that are actually rising the ranks? Like, where are we with high school football right now?
Well, the best five, no surprise. Lincoln Way East, Maine South, Prairie Ridge, Naperville Central, Phillips. Some schools that have surprised. Barrington has been really good. Mm-hmm. Cary Grove has been good. Naperville North, where EP Joe Romano went, they've been really good. They were down, I think they were down 49 points against Edwardsville, came back and won.
What? That's crazy.
And then Batavia as well in the top 20 now. So you'll learn a lot, though, this week. Conference play begins. 10 teams in the top 20 on the road tonight, too. So there could be some upsets.
What do you guys got tonight?
I don't know yet. But, I mean, figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, is it just going
to
be?
We know you talked to a interesting guy, a head coach who's turned a certain program into a powerhouse.
Yeah, Phillips' first public league team to win a state championship. They did it in 2015.
Right.
Troy McAllister, he's a Canadian coaching in an all-black neighborhood on the south side.
We had him on. We had him on when they won that city, when they won that year in 2015. We talked about it because that's a huge story. And that team was not expected to be as good as they were, and they continue to be good. And that's all on the – because it's hard. I mean, there's no recruiting. You know what I mean? Like, I guess maybe there is in city college – I mean, in city high schools, but
– He tells a story about his first practice. There were 12 people that showed up.
Yeah, I mean, the recruiting, the extent of recruiting in situations like that is just getting kids out there. It's not like you're going out of your area to actually – it's just more of like, hey, let's go do something, you know? Like, let's – you're not – in a club, you're not doing – just come out and play football. We'll show you a few things and look.
You know
what's
nice about the handshake line, too, after the games?
What's
is that the kids go down the line saying, nice game, eh? Nice game. Nice game, eh? Good game, eh? Good game, eh?
He's rubbing off on his players.
What is the game – what's the game of the week?
Loyola Mount Carmel, which is tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Number 9 Loyola, number 12 Mount Carmel. Unfortunately, we won't have anything on that tonight. That's tomorrow, but we'll preview that. Mike Helfgott, our guy, he's going to join us after 10:30. To break that down, we've got our reporters everywhere. We've got reporters at Richard Shepherd. We've got St. Rita Providence. Another big game tomorrow, Phillips and Simeon. That'll be at Gately Stadium on the south side.
That's always a classic.
On 103rd.
I love going to that place,
yeah. Saturday Night Lights. The only issue, I think a lot of people were upset that the Cubs were sort of stealing the spotlight on Friday night. And that's why they're losing 2-0 to the Brewers. Is it final?
That's what they got.
One out away. One strike away.
One strike away. Kev, last question. How did my McHenry Warriors do?
I'm working on that right now. I am Googling a way to find your score.
This is where I get this is the only place I get that information. I don't seek it out at any other time.
What's the mascot name?
The Warriors. McHenry Warriors.